You are listening to a sermon by John Neufeld, recorded on Sunday, June 26, 2011, at the Point Grey Interminonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
Several months ago, another senior and I were chatting at a reception, a luncheon after a funeral in our church. We're talking about getting older, and when I think of it, the combined ages of the two of us was about 166 years. And so some of you could figure out that I was the younger of the two. The other one, a woman, has turned 90 since that conversation. Well, what we were talking about during that little conversation was, could we come up with a few things that would be good for all seniors to live and practice during their retirement years? And in a few moments, we thought we had three good things. And the first one that we came up with was, every senior has to have a passion for something, a reason to get up and to do something, whether it's a hobby, volunteering, or pursue a subject, whatever. The second thing we came up with was that seniors need to practice curiosity as long as they possibly can. And the third thing we said was, in order to put up with all the crap that comes along in the senior years, we might as well keep on developing a sense of humor. Because if you don't laugh, you have to take medicine. And I thought about this conversation as I was working on this text. Now, I know that not too many weeks ago, this text was in the lectionary reading, and I think Veronica preached on it. And that was a little intimidating to begin with. But I thought, if I take the second point that we came to that afternoon about curiosity, I'd take a run at this text because I hadn't taught or preached on this text for a long, long time. Now, some of you might ask, so what's to be curious about with this text out of John 10? We've known this passage since childhood and have probably learned verse 10 by memory. And if I learned it as a child, it must certainly be simple enough. So what's the big deal? Now, is there anything to be curious about these metaphors about the gate and the shepherd? Jesus claimed he was both. So I left the text for a while and looked for a quote or two on curiosity. And I found two that I liked particularly, one by Albert Einstein, who died in 1955, and the other by Alice Parker, or Dorothy Parker, who died in 1967. This is what Einstein wrote. The important thing is not to stop questioning. Curiosity has its own reason for existing. One cannot help but be in awe when we contemplate the mysteries of eternity, of life, and of the marvelous structure of reality. It is enough if one tries merely to comprehend a little of this mystery every day. Never lose a holy curiosity. And Dorothy Parker, who was a poet and a bit of a wit, she said, the cure for boredom is curiosity. And there is no cure for curiosity. Isn't that nice? Then I returned to John 10. Familiar words which I had known since I learned them in German many years ago. I am the good shepherd. I am the gate. And the I am the good shepherd, I am the way, the truth, and the life, and all the other I ams. But when we hear these familiar things that we learned long ago, our excitement is not necessarily kindled. We do not lean forward in our seats. We do not sit on the edge of our seats when we hear someone read, I am the good shepherd. Nor do we get upset. We know this already. We've heard it. And repeatedly we fail to do what the other person and I were discussing that luncheon. We fail to turn on our curiosity. Our assumed familiarity with these words tends toward a ho-hum attitude. Yeah, I've heard this already. And we're ready to move on to something new and exciting. We fail to practice curiosity and we get bored to death. And some of you may have wondered as we were reading and hearing John 10 today, why do we have to read this same passage again? We had it on May 15th, didn't we? Aren't we done with that? But Einstein said, the important thing is never to stop questioning. And it's not only these expressions that we have to hear repeatedly. We need to remind us about the same thing, for example, about Psalm 23 or the Lord's Prayer. How often have I caught myself when we recite the Lord's Prayer in church, thinking of a bunch of other things while I'm repeating the words I know by memory? After all, I know it by heart. Now, maybe this doesn't happen to any of you, but my hunch is it probably does. And how often do we actually think of what we're singing when we sing, Take Thou My Hand, O Father, so nimm denn meine Hände, or Gott ist die Liebe, for God so loved us. And when we hear the words from Isaiah, all we like sheep have gone astray, do we think about Isaiah's intention with those words? Or do we think of the tune that Handel put to those words? That nice, lively, energetic tune, all we like sheep. We recall the melody, and we have masked the intent of those ancient words. And we hear nothing new about the human situation or about our own lives. And as soon as we are within earshot of such familiar verses and texts, and the echo of our previous hearings reverberate in our minds, we jump to conclusions. Oh yeah, I know this one. I know what it's all about. And I know what's coming. So why don't you just go on to something different, preacher? I've known this since I was a child. And this may have happened to some of us as we heard John 10. Well, there were Pharisees and scribes in Jesus' day whose level of curiosity had sunk to a new low. They had all their insights written down, codified, and tied with ribbons. They knew what things meant, what God had wanted them to do, what was right, with whom to eat, with whom to avoid, and how to do everything properly. Questions and challenges were no longer welcome. Curiosity was no longer encouraged. And religion had become familiar, boring, and repetitive. And curiosity and creativity had been drained out of its veins. It had become a burdensome yoke to many. And along came a young rabbi who dared to ruffle a few feathers, who dared to ask uncomfortable questions, and who challenged the stifling conformity of his time with a fresh approach, fueled by spirit-driven curiosity and courage. At one point, Matthew makes a comment in his gospel. He says, the crowds were astonished at his teaching, for he taught them as one having authority, not as the scribes. These were some of my thoughts as I was dealing with John 10. And two things struck me early on. Did you notice that near the beginning of the passage, the disciples, hearing Jesus use familiar metaphors, figures of speech, John says, they did not understand. They didn't get it. And secondly, at the end of the passage, verse 19, 20, there's another surprising comment. Jesus had made these comments about himself being the gate and the shepherd. He had to repeat stuff because the disciples didn't get it. And that's followed by another comment by the writer. Many of the Jews were saying, he has a demon. He's out of his mind. Why listen to him? Now, for some reason, Jesus' familiar words about himself as gate and shepherd got these surprising reactions. The disciples didn't understand the figure of speech, and among the others, one hears charges of demon possession and being mentally unsound. Now, I think I noticed in the hymns that were chosen carefully that in at least five of the hymns, the shepherd theme came up that we sang this morning. Did you notice? Mm-hmm. Now, none of those hymns and the phrases bothered us. They comforted us. Why did people in the audience at the first get all worked up about it? He used the same words. I'm the good shepherd. And I doubt if anyone here today felt that these figures of speech are difficult. We weren't even mildly offended by the text. And I doubt whether anyone thought, whoever said these words and whoever put this phrase into all those hymns must certainly be out of his mind. But apparently that first audience had a different set of ears or hearing aids than we have. And that may be why they came to a different set of conclusions. Let's put it this way. What we hear with is probably as important as what we hear. And what the original Jewish hearers were hearing with must have shaped what they were hearing, and that's what ticked them off. Now, memories play a big role in our hearing ability in any conversation or any setting. Either they enhance and enrich our hearing, or they inhibit and impair our hearing. And when Jesus used shepherd language, they and we would first of all probably think of Psalm 23. But not too many, except Old Testament scholars or those Jewish rabbis, would think of another Old Testament passage which got them mad. And you and I don't read this passage very often. It's Ezekiel 34. And if those Jewish hearers had Ezekiel 34 in their memory, then we know the reason why they were ticked off. So, in that chapter, Ezekiel speaks against the shepherds of Israel. And the shepherds of Israel were actually not shepherds. They were the rulers, and the prophet said, putting words into the mouth of God, I am against the shepherds. And without being asked for an elaboration, he did it anyway, and he said, "You have not strengthened the weak, you have not healed the sick, you have not bound up the injured, you have not sought the lost." In other words, may I say it? You don't give a damn. You don't care. You have become irresponsible, apathetic, and self-seeking. And then Ezekiel puts more words into the mouth of God. And you know what he says? "I myself will be the shepherd of my sheep. I will seek the lost. I will bring back the strayed. I will bind up the injured and strengthen the weak. And I will feed them with justice." Now, if these words were in the collective memory of the Jewish audience, especially the religious leaders who knew the old scrolls, it is no wonder that they thought he was out of his mind. With Ezekiel's hearing aid, they heard, and they were uncomfortable, and they reacted. So what's Jesus actually doing when he said, in the hearing of those who knew Ezekiel 34, when he says, "I am the good shepherd"? That's a direct attack on their no longer being good shepherds. It's an indictment of their failure as leaders of God's people. And Jesus' words actually amount to the unheard of and unwelcome claim that "I am actually one with Yahweh," whom Ezekiel was quoting. "I myself will be shepherd, king, and Lord, and I will be the real leader of my people." And so with the help of Ezekiel, the misunderstanding of the disciples and the sharp critique of the leaders begin to make some sense. The disciples could not believe their ears. "You, Jesus of Nazareth, our rabbi, with whom we walk and associate every day, you are claiming to be the expected Messiah of God's people? That blows our minds. That's about as revolutionary as it gets. Did we hear you right? Or did we really misunderstand your images?" And Jesus took the time to repeat, to clarify, to reclaim, and he said, "Yes, I am the fulfillment of ancient dreams about the Messiah shepherd of Israel, of Ezekiel. I am the good shepherd." And that means the other shepherds have failed. "And my claim to be the good shepherd is a word of judgment against the current leadership in Israel. My claim to be the good shepherd is actually a challenge to follow my teaching and my example, and to reject the teaching and the example of these false shepherds who fleece the flock, line their pockets, and don't care at all for the welfare of the sheep entrusted to them." And what Jesus' words amounted to were, "I am claiming to be an alternative to that which is your cherished status quo." Now, whoever makes such preposterous claims must either be demon-possessed or insane. That's the only conclusion the leaders could come to, given the fact that they were the protectors of the system that sustained them and gave them status and prestige. And now their defensive question, "Listen to him," begins to make sense. What the audience was hearing with in their collective memory and tradition was Ezekiel's sharp critique of Israel's leaders, and it sensitized them to the depth of Jesus' claim about actually being the good shepherd. And that got under their skin and raised their hackles. And then as I reread this passage, I found one other clue why they were upset. It's in verse 16. We heard it. Didn't upset us. Jesus said, I have other sheep that don't belong to this flock, so I must bring them in also, and they will listen to my voice. And then, the zinger. So there will be one flock, one shepherd. Sounds harmless, doesn't it? But it challenged the cherished assumptions of the leaders and set the alarm bells ringing, because they had a very strong sense, we are the chosen people of God. We are special. How dare you suggest that these others are also sheep? We consider them to be goats or swine, but not sheep. And how dare you suggest that we are all going to be one flock? No wonder they thought he was out of his mind. So if we have this in our thinking, it seems to me that Jesus' familiar and usually comforting words have taken on a slightly different tone. This is no longer the children's feature in the worship service. This is adult stuff. Adults were intended to chew on these metaphors. And there's more bite to them than we may have sensed earlier. There's more challenge to them. There's a very sharp critique that we had than what we had earlier imagined. And so the familiar words we once learned in childhood are actually a call for adults to undertake a radical reorientation of our beliefs and our practice. So unless we have turned off our hearing aids, you and I have heard a fresh claim this morning. When Jesus says, I am the good shepherd, it's a reminder that we, in fact, no matter how old or sophisticated or trained we are in whatever we're trained in, we do, in fact, need guidance. And secondly, that we examine our cherished values and priorities and assumptions and blind spots in the light of Jesus' teaching, example, and sacrifice. You and I may want, well, maybe not anyone here. Some people still want to live without being guided at all. Or we may want to live in defiance of the way Jesus wants to guide us. Or we would like to restrict his guidance to a narrow personal area of our lives, while following our culturally dictated ways without too much reflection. And so the question I want to leave is, will you and I be among those who say, he's out of his mind, why listen to him? Or will we be among those who believe his guidance is in fact really good and insightful, leading us in the direction of life that he described as abundant? Amen.